Hello, welcome to the Book Club Haters Book Club.
A podcast where we discuss the books we love and otherwise. I'm Noor.
And I'm Tia. I reached 22 out of 20 of my reading challenge for 2020.
Congratulations. Yeah. I stopped keeping track of my reading challenge.
I often forget. Congratulations, I guess, whatever. It's just very lackluster. Yeah. So, I read this book that I really enjoyed, but I cannot for the life of me tell you why or what the book is about, because it's a lot of stuff. It's a really thick book. So I read The Poppy War by R.F. Kuang. It's about a girl called Rin and how she wants to join an institution where the kids in the institution are prepared for government work and military work. Uh-huh. And so the first half of the book is her in this, not even the first half, I think I can't even remember, it's a really long book. So it's her trying to fight for a place to go to the school and also finding herself throughout the whole book because she is an adopted child to adopted parents who just didn't really care for her because judging by her look, she has dark skin, Asian dark skin. And that's seen as lowly in their society.
Ooh, colorism.
Yeah. So there's a bit of colorism. And then like over time, she found out why and where she actually comes from. And there's a bit of this. Initially, when I picked up this book, it was about war. And the more I read into it, there's a bit of magic in it too. Not a bit. There's a lot of magic in it. Yeah. And I just really like it. But I don't know what about the book I want to talk about because there's so many things that happen throughout it. I really enjoyed it though.
The writing was good. That's my conclusion.
The writing was good. And because it's a Chinese fantasy book, and like all or most fantasy book, there's a lot of characters. It's a lot of things that happen. It reads like a YA, which I thought was really good. And what I found difficult was because there's so many characters, it's hard to keep up somehow sometimes because you think like this certain sentence is significant and then it isn't. That happens quite a bit, I think, with fantasy books sometimes. But I don't know if it's going to be significant in the future books or anything like that. So right now I'm reading the second book of the series, The Poppy War.
It's a series. I didn't know that.
It's a series. Yeah, it's a trilogy. I'm reading the second one called The Dragon.
T-H-R-I-L. L.
Yeah, it's a trilogy. I know. I realized I said trilogy. I meant as in three books in a trilogy. Yeah. So the second book is called The Dragon Republic. And yeah, I quite like it too. I just don't know how to convince people to read this book other than I really enjoyed it. It was pretty good.
I think the issue with the lots of characters thing happened to me with Empire of Gold. Lord, there were lots, and I was like, okay, who are you? At one point, I kept like forgetting like Akisa, who Akisa was, and like who this man is, like the priest. Yeah. I don't know who you are, but okay.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Because for me, there are some books that has done that, and when they do. The second book, for instance, when the writer writes the second book and publishes it, they're really good at reminding people who those characters are in the first book or at least reminding what happened in the first book by just like a sentence or two.
Yeah.
But with Empire of Gold, I think she didn't really do that. And I think even with The Poppy War, there was very little repetition of who these people are. So I was just constantly confused. But I just powered through because even if I try flipping through, I don't know, 100 pages before and stuff, I probably wouldn't be able to find the introduction of that character. I know some major characters because some major characters are mostly the main character, Rin, she would fight them and stuff. And that's very memorable and things like that. But they're also like minor characters who I guess supposedly play some sort of role, like plays an important function in the army, world. For instance. Yeah, I don't know about the world.
In the world of the book.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's just no mention of it. And sometimes there's this two characters that has almost the same name. It starts with Chang. And sometimes when I read the insignificant character whose name starts with Chang, I'm like, I don't know who that is. Who this is? Is this the significant one or the insignificant one? So like, I have to kind of stop and have a think about it. And also like, because it's a story set in war, so the pace is constantly moving. Right. And it does remind me a lot like Empire of Gold, because it is also a story of war and it's constantly moving. And sometimes that moving forward doesn't look back as much. Because it's like one storyline to another, to another, to another. Do you know the story about how Harry Potter was written?
No.
So she does mirror chapters with, like, for instance, are there like 30 chapters? There are probably more, I can't even remember. Sometimes she'll introduce a problem that Harry comes across at chapter 9. Uh-huh. And then she'll find a solution to that story in the ninth chapter before the end.
Okay.
So it's mirror chapters. So she does that, mirroring the beginning and the end. Problem at the beginning, solution at the chapter that reflects the beginning.
Oh, wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's why, like, with, I think maybe because J.K. Rowling wrote a massive book and she had good editors who, and also she did kind of plot the story for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. So with J.K. Rowling, you know that there's going to be a solution at the end. Yeah. But with this one, it's like story after story, problem after problem. I don't know when the solution is going to come, if ever a solution is ever going to come either.
That's so stressful to me.
It is, yeah, it's slightly stressful for me to read sometimes because I don't, so what I've been doing is that with this book, so Poppy War was fine because I was reading it throughout a whole week and I was on leave, so I could just read it in the morning up to the evening. But with Dragon Republic, is that the name of the book? Oh, God. So with the current book that I'm reading now, it's difficult because I'm reading it in the evening. And for the past 2 days, I didn't read it because I didn't have time because I just wanted to go to sleep. Last night, I went back to it and I was like, I don't know what happened before this. Because there's just so many things, so many plot points.
What do you do when that happens? Do you go back? I usually go back.
I read the last page of the chapter before. And then I get what happened. Mm. Yeah. So I'm reading another book. I'm reading a memoir right now, which is slightly unusual for me. I don't know if I'm not going to say if I don't know if I like it or not. I think it's fine. So I'm reading The Education of an Idealist by Samantha Power. Samantha Power is like my hero. I really, really like her. She is. And she's a good storyteller. And after hearing her speak so many times, I can kind of just read the words and imagine her voice.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's a really long book. I think it might be like 600 pages. So I don't know if I'll ever finish it. I know.
I don't know if I could do that.
Like, old books were also that thick.
Especially if it's like a memoir and like autobiography. Mm. Like, how do I care enough about this person's life to read 600 pages?
No, you're right. So I'm only reading the parts where she's talking about her childhood right now. So I could move through those pretty fast. But I am really fascinated with how she, because she's an idealist and she had to work for the US government. And she's very strong on her stance about human rights. So I've always wondered how she is able to manage and equalize both of those positions. Because she can't step out of line as somebody who works in government. Mm. But I haven't gone to that part yet because I haven't read the book in a week. So I don't know if I'll ever finish it. We'll see.
So that's two books.
Three books. Yeah, man. How about you?
I'm just like looking.
You read 50.
I read a lot. Like a lot. You did. I think over the past month I've read maybe, sometimes I read like two books a day. Most of the time I read two books a day. But it was like mostly rereads. And the days when I did read like a new stuff was, okay. I read 1, 2, 3, 4 new books. But I think I want to talk about Always Only You by Chloe Lise. So I read, this is the second book in like the Bergman Brothers series, which is like a romantic, it's a romance series, but like each book centers on a brother of, from one of the brothers from this like big family. And it's really interesting because this series is by, is an Own Voices book series. I'm not selling this right. So Chloe Lise has autism, or is autistic. What's the right word? Is autistic?
I have spoken about this to my friend who is autistic. And she refers herself as an autistic person.
Okay.
But the thing like, is, this term might change.
It depends on the person, right, sometimes.
Yeah, it depends on the person. Also, these terms and whether or not they are acceptable language might change in the next month or in the next 2 years. Who knows? So at this very moment, autistic is still acceptable. I don't see why that's a problem.
Yeah. So she says she's autistic. Okay. So she's autistic and her thing, her writing is all about like marginalized characters. And in the first book, she had the hero was, I don't remember their names, any of them. So the hero is...
sounds like you've been reading fantasy.
What? No, it's just the language that we use. The hero suffers from an illness, and then he loses his hearing because of it. And then this is him like meeting the heroine when he's like in college, and they're... Jematullah, you know, like she's a. I talked about this before. I think where the one with the soccer player. I just woke up like an hour you did. Ago.
I did too. So.
Lord.
Jematullah. Okay. Jematullah. All right.
This one is the hero is a hockey player, and the heroine is a social media manager for the team that he plays for. She's autistic, and also she has early onset arthritis, so she wears a cane. She's a huge Harry Potter nerd, and her cane, she names the cane the Elder Wand.
Ha.
Yeah, and it's, I like it. It's funny. I like it a lot. And I find it, recently, I feel like I've been trying to diversify the kinds of books I read and the kinds of characters that I read. So this is kind of like one of that, I guess.
No, that's good.
I really enjoyed it.
Maybe I should, not maybe I should, I definitely should read more stories with disabled characters, but I also haven't made any effort to seek for those books.
Yeah,
that's my problem to solve.
For me, it's a little bit easier because you could just search for like recommendations for the kinds of for like diverse books. So there are lots of lists for, especially for romance. Like there's the so you can search very specifically by the trope, by the subgenre, by their occupation. So it's pretty fun. So it's easier for me.
That's really handy.
Yeah.
Super hands.
Yeah. Other than that, I've mostly been rereading and rereading. Like I would reread a favorite of mine. I read I read the Hidden Legacy series. My mouth is not cooperating today. I don't know why. So I read the Hidden Legacy series. Because you just
woke up an hour ago.
Yeah. There are 5 of them now. And then as soon as I finished the 5th one, which is the newest one, I just went back mm-hmm. to the first one again
mm-hmm.
and went mm-hmm. through it again.
Mm.
I did that 3 times, I think.
Okay. Can I ask, what is our next section usually? Is it book thoughts or is it question time?
It's book thoughts.
Okay, do you want to move on to... Do you want to move on to book thoughts?
Yeah, sure.
Since
yeah.
this is somehow related.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Welcome to Book Thoughts. So our subject for this week is comfort reads, because you seem to do that a lot while I do not.
Yeah. Okay.
So you went back to the first book and why?
So some background is that I have complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which is what happens, mm-hmm. What can happen if you experience prolonged trauma, like domestic abuse. Usually it's a little bit different than PTSD, where sometimes PTSD is like an event that happens, right? But complex PTSD is usually something like multiple complex. Events and like, yeah, complex, like it spans a long time. And
it's a long time, yeah.
And obviously that affects the body in slightly different ways. So mm-hmm. I always have to be really, really careful with content that I consume, because anything, like literally anything, can trigger me, because my experience was that a lot of my trauma stems from things that happen on a regular basis, on an everyday basis. So it was mm-hmm. it's something that I need to be very, very careful with. Like if for me personally, if someone is shouting in a TV series or in a movie or even in a book, if there's like capital letters, I'm just like, it's a no for me. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it's comfort reads for me is that I know that it's something that I choose to do. So that's reading. And I know that 100% of the way until I finish this book, I will be safe.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because I know everything that is gonna happen. Not like every line, but like I know that whatever happens next in this book, I'm going to be fine.
Is your comfort read often books that you have read before, or is it also new books?
It's also new books, but it is also within. It's mostly why I go towards romance for my comfort mm-hmm. new reads, because
mm-hmm.
the promise of romance books is that you will have a happily ever after. Like, that's it, the happy yeah. ending. There is always going to be a happy ending. And I just need to know that, like, even through their ups and through their downs of this couple, they're going to get there. They're going to be happy together, you know?
Mm.
And mm-hmm. obviously, like, if you're talking about, like the Poppy War that you mentioned, it mm-hmm. didn't seem like there was going to be like a happy ending at all or a solution. And that's really stressful for me. So I don't know if I can do that. Like is it worth it for me to go through all that pain?
I did talk to you about this because I read like 3 chapters and I texted you, said I found a book that I really like that I know that I'm going to give 5 stars. And I kept reading the book. A few days later, I texted you saying, don't read the book because it's very triggering. And there's a lot of images of war and abuse, which was, I don't know, the way she wrote it was just very, very visual. Mm. And it was kind of terrifying to read a bit. for me anyhow. So I was like, yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to read it. You don't have to read it now, I guess.
Yeah, I already bought it. I mean, I bought it, surprisingly, I bought it before you told me to, before you told me you liked it. I was like, oh, I bought that book.
So that was really funny.
So I don't know when I'll read that. Sometimes I do read new things, like, that are non-romance. But only if I'm, like, if it meets the specific conditions of my environment, which sounds a bit weird, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I guess that's one thing that you have mentioned before. You can just, for you, you can just flip through pages where you know that you can't take it, whereas for me, like, I can power through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it's hard, right? If you're gonna, like, flip through pages, what if you miss the story? And I hate missing the story.
Yeah.
And if I can just flip through the story, then, like, why is that bit there anyway in the first place? Like, that means, like, it's unnecessary, right?
It depends, because what book did we read that you kind of flipped through? Was it My Sister?
My Sister is a Serial Killer.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of a plot point. And for you to argue that isn't necessary to be there, I don't know if you feel that way about the book, because you did flip past it.
I still got the story. But I do wonder if I didn't flip past that scene, would I understand the story better or something?
But it's storytelling. Storytelling, like, with books, I don't know if it's the same with films. You don't really have a set amount of words that you can write. And I think it's fine if authors would want to add in things like that into the book to emphasize, the severity.
The situation, right?
Right. Like, I disagree with, for instance, if I'm watching TV shows and there's just a fuckload of female nudity. And I always question that, like, whose decision was it? But the reason why I question whether or not female nudity should even be there is because we have a problem with the male gaze. But if, like, the Poppy War, the scene I told you was very, I don't know, I think it was like a whole chapter. It was pretty bloody triggering. It was because I think for me, that scene stuck in my head. Like, I'm not even going to mention it. It was pretty brutal. It's because she was describing how severe war can get, and also trying to point out how cruel the people who they are opposing actually are. She could have just said, oh, a war happened, we went to this place, and then there were, like, dead bodies everywhere. I don't think it was as effective, because what happened with that scene, for instance, was throughout the whole book, and even carried on to the second, Rin kept mentioning about that scene that she saw.
Ooh, trauma.
Of a whole village that's just completely wiped out and annihilated. So it was kind of in addition to the many trauma that she's already dealt with. Also, since we're on the subject, I do have to mention R.F. Huang did a really excellent job at writing PTSD for Rin's character. That's all. That's all I have to say about that.
That's good. I always find it quite jarring if, like, characters, I mean, books with characters who have suffered from trauma, and then their journey,
they're fine.
Yeah, and they're just fine. Or, like, it's Harry Potter. Satisfying how they kind of deal with their trauma, and you're like, God, you're doing this character dirty.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that Rin had to go through was that she became addicted to poppy, opium. And part of it is because she is a woman in army full of men, and a lot of the men were telling her, like, oh, you shouldn't be on opium. You should, you know, you have the ability to stop it, blah, blah, blah. But they don't realize that she is the last of her race, first of all. She is also, she's seen so many shit for somebody that young. And she doesn't know where she comes from. She just doesn't have really an identity. She doesn't have a lot of things that keeps her grounded. So opium was her way to escape everything, basically. It's just no one really wants to help her overcome the trauma. So she uses drugs, right?
Yeah. It's coping.
I don't have comfort reads or comfort anything, I don't think.
Comfort aid. That's, yeah, please.
What? I go to sleep. I told you this. If things get difficult, I take naps. It's just my body's way of saying, oh, just shut up.
Okay.
Shut up and shut down for a bit. Yeah. Because I overthink things, right? Like, I have anxiety. And sometimes I'm a solution-driven person. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm faced with a problem, I really want a solution. And if I don't come to that solution, I just stress about it more. So I just don't do the whole comfort thing. And instead, my body just decides, oh, I've exhausted myself from all the thinking. I need to take a nap.
And when you wake up, what happens?
I don't know. That's a great nap.
It makes me wonder now. Like,
but to be fair, I also haven't.
If you are a solution-driven person, and your solution is, I mean, after all that thinking, you still can't get a solution, so you take a nap, which is valid. Yeah. What is mine then? What am I driven by? I don't know.
For your body to be in a safe space, because with trauma of any form, the trauma sticks in your body, is what I know. So for you to go to those books is for you to stop it a bit, I guess. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I'm by safety.
Yeah, my safety is sleep, because I don't know if anyone's ever gonna murder me in my sleep.
Please. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know. I mean, like, it's just a way of. To be fair, like, I haven't done the whole napping thing in a while, because I've been better at managing my anxiety. I don't know. I just go to sleep, but I haven't done that in quite a while. So,
if you don't have comfort reads, I think you have like comfort TV shows.
Not even. I don't. I'm trying to think, like, the last time where I was just really, really, really stressed. I guess, like, the whole COVID thing, when it first came, I was watching a lot of TV shows that I really like. But I don't think they're necessarily comfort. I just like them, I guess. But I also had a lot of problems sleeping that time.
Okay.
TV shows? I don't know. Maybe I don't have... I don't know. I don't think about it that often. But I do know I sleep well if I'm really, really stressed.
Your body is shut down.
Yeah, my body is just... It's a way of saying that I just take a break, I guess. It's good that you know what to do, though. I mean, in those situations, it's good that you know what to do.
I honestly, I only found out, like, maybe 2 weeks ago, I think. I only realized it 2 weeks
ago. About comfort reads?
About why, like, you know how I say, like, oh, I'm always, it's a comfort read. But I don't really understand, like, how it's comforting.
Oh.
So I was just like, it's a comfort read. I don't know why, though, but it's like... it's comfortable. It's like, I feel okay.
That's weird.
Yeah,
I didn't realize you didn't know.
I didn't know. I was just like, it's a comfort read. Yeah. I like it. And then I'm like, yes. And then 2 weeks ago, I went on this Instagram for CPTSD. And then there were like avoid triggers. And I was like, why? why? And then it says, like, and then they say, because your body thinks that your brain is always trying to convince you that the world is unsafe.
You're in threat.
And you should,
yeah.
Like, everything is a threat. And, you know, like, a way to do that is to avoid all of the triggering things and then watch or consume media and art that you know for sure is going to be safe for you and not triggering. And I'm like, so that's why. All these things just like slid into place in my brain finally.
Yeah, I see. Okay. That's good that you have a better understanding of how that works.
So now I can like, it's nice because now I can figure out also, because there are some stuff in my library that I like, but I may not be in the right frame of mind to actually read them. So I can just judge like, okay, so this book has some really kind of like people being really mean to children or something like that. And I'm I'm not up for that today, you know? So it's kind of like further filtering through what I have and, wow, I really am safety driven. This is scary.
Why is it scary?
I don't know. I'm always like kind of scared when I find out new things about myself.
I mean, if there are things that you can control, because there are going to be a lot of things in your life, in your everyday life, where things are triggering. And if you can control that one aspect, I feel like that's a good progress.
Yeah.
Towards actually making your body learn that the world is safe bit by bit.
Yeah. It is like, because reading is something that I choose to do and it is something like I find enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And I would like something that I enjoy to be also safe, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Should we move on?
Do you want to? Sure.
Okay. I don't have a question.
It's question time.
I don't have a question.
I have a question, though.
Go on.
Okay. You think this is a simple question, but the answer isn't, because I had a discussion with my friend about this very recently. Okay. Would you want to be a librarian or a bookseller?
I think I want to be a librarian because I've tried selling stuff and I hate it.
Okay.
Have you ever sold stuff as like a business?
I don't think I ever told you this, but this came into my head like a few days ago. I was a brownie, and do you know what that is? A brownie?
No.
Oh my god. Come on.
I was a child, please.
I was in Girl Guides.
Were you?
Does that... Bitch, I'm a leader. Of course I was in a Girl Guide. So please, Girl Guide,
so
if...
Why?
Why does it make so much sense?
I was proactive. You, like all of your like, things about you, just like she was a girl guy. Everything makes sense. Now.
Yeah. So So brownie is a term for I think under the age of 12 probably. So the girls, the tiny girls, are called brownies. So I was a brownie, and I first joined the Girl Guide when I was, I don't even know, probably 8 or something. And for one of the things that we had to do was we had to sell things. I was 8, by the way. And so we sold food, like sandwiches and drinks and stuff. And there's this one kid, like, I don't know how old he was. He called me Muchy.
Oh, my God. I guess you call everyone selling food Machi. That's so cute.
And I was just so shocked at hearing somebody call me that as an 8-year-old.
Oh my god.
That was so funny.
Then did it traumatize you? Like, and then you didn't sell anything?
I don't know. I don't know if I ever sold anything else after that. I don't think I have. But it did kind of made an impact on me about how much I value youth. I mean, but also to be fair, I don't know what he would have called me. But he also saw me and he's like, she's only slightly older. Why did he call me Machi, asshole?
Because you were selling child. Food.
I know he... Ugh, but still.
It's like Machi the lady to me at the is like, canteen, at the, your school canteen.
I know. Right? I know. But still. Okay. You want to be a librarian?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Okay, so if given the choice, I actually wanted to go into like, I was looking into back then, maybe like.
We all did, yeah, babe.
Like into a master's of like fucking library, yeah. something systems. I don't even know. But I was like, I can read all the books. I can order all the books that I want.
Mm-hmm.
Pending budget. And I could just like
I was gonna say
and then like just sit and just shush people.
You know, I don't think the whole you can just order whatever book you want is actually true, because I don't know how it is in Brunei, but I was reading something recently about librarians and how people donate books to libraries, and they would only put up books on the shelves that they know are going to be checked out, because if you're just putting books that are not being checked out, that's just a library is just a place to hoard.
Yeah, wasting the shelf space.
Yeah. So what ends up happening is the books they know that are not going to be checked out, they sell the books for cheap.
Mm.
Yup. So even if you become a librarian, you still have to be a bookseller.
But then I'm not like, my livelihood, it doesn't depend on the sales.
Depends. I guess it depends on... Are you thinking yourself as a bookseller who owns the bookstore?
Or yeah, just... bitch. What?
Oh, okay. Dream big. I wasn't even thinking that far. I was thinking like...
A Waterstones employee?
No, not even that. Like the person or the people who owns the... I like the idea of being a bookseller, an indie bookseller.
Yeah. Isn't that the same?
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, you own the business.
It doesn't mean I own the business. Somebody else can own the business and I can be like the manager or something.
Oh, so your dreams stop at being the manager, but not being the employee. Yeah. As in the person who talks to people about selling the books.
Listen... It's a complicated system. So one of my friend is a bookseller, and I had this discussion with her because her sister is a librarian, and she said, I prefer to be a bookseller because people don't have to give me the books back in crap quality, because she said sometimes librarians have to face with a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Figuratively and literally. And so what her position is, she's a manager of the bookstore, but there are people who owns the bookstore who are basically the people who pays her.
Yeah.
And so she's technically-ish like second in command. And then she has people, the employees and stuff under her. And she gets to talk to people about books and stuff and meet people, which is nice.
Yeah. I mean, that's okay too.
I don't have an answer whether I want to be a librarian or a bookseller. I kind of like the idea of both, honestly.
I wish there was like, I don't know. I feel like for me, it's always like a dream to like have a little bookstore, right? I don't know.
Ooh, yeah.
Either my dream is always either having a little bookstore or having a little library. It's either those two. And I feel like a library would be more chill because I've tried out the small business... selling things, trying to get people to buy my shit thing. I hate it. It is terrible. And I feel like lending, having a library would be okay. But there's still the stress of getting people to go to your library.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
What aspect of selling did you hate?
I hate the fact that I have to attract people to it. Because, you know, you just can't, like, just stand there and people flock to you, right?
Isn't that the same problem as library?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I just said. Like, the problem with... it's a different set of things. Mm-hmm. I hate selling because it's such a, like... you know, it's an exchange of money, right? But this, but in the library, for the library, it's more like an exchange of your time and interest. And it's hard. It's a different set of requirements, but they're still both difficult. So I don't know now. It's just a dream. Like, the library is so cool. Like, I could just sit there. But, like, in reality, it's actually still a lot of work. Like,
it's a lot of work, yeah. Yeah. One of my friends is a librarian, and not in Brunei. She really likes it, but she said it also comes with a lot of stress. Every time I talk to her, she's, like, perpetually stressed, but I don't know if that's just her being a stressed person.
Whenever I see, like, the librarians in Brunei, like, behind the desk, they seem pretty chill.
They do, don't they? Yeah. Which is not a reflection of the libraries in schools.
No. The librarians in school, I guess, because are quite, like, mildly mean. Stressed. And they're like,
I would maybe be also because school libraries are busier than everyday libraries.
Yeah.
Unless you go to, like, the one in Bandar.
Yeah. The one in Sengkurong holds a lot of events.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What kind?
They do workshops sometimes. They do fairs. Ooh. And they, like, bring in... sometimes I see, like, Bomba there. I think they do, like, a briefing or whatever, you know? So that's what they do. They are kind of... they do events for the community.
Yeah, because that's what the purpose of libraries are. It's meant to be a social space. So I find it really frustrating when libraries in Brunei just don't use it as a social space other than to get kids come in or adults to come in and borrow books. And I don't know if adults actually do come in and borrow books.
I don't know either. One of my former friends, her family used to... her family goes to the library still, so, and they read books cool. there, so I don't know. I guess people do actually use the book part of the library.
Maybe we should be exemplary citizens and go to the library. Okay, sure. Fair enough. Do you have a question?
I don't. I still don't. I'm so sorry. Okay.
So what are we going to do about this? Do we move on?
Let's move on.
Let's move on. Okay. So our book for our book club.
Wait. Welcome to our book club.
Oh, right.
Oh, sure. Gosh.
Oh. We don't have to welcome people to everything we do.
We do.
I can just do whatever I want. Okay. Very polite, though. So our book for September is Disfigured on Fairy Tales, Disability, and Making Space by Amanda Leduc. What'd you think?
I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't... I read it through audio. Which is, like, is that how you say, I don't know how you say, like, I listened to it on audio. And it went by really quickly.
Just say you read it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Was she the narrator?
No, it's another Amanda. I really like the narrator.
It's another Amanda?
Yeah. The narrator is an Amanda, but I forgot her last name.
That's amazing. Okay.
I'm very picky about the narration, and I was, like, really worried that the narrator was going to be... it was not to my taste, but thankfully, she was very, very engaging to listen to. I don't know how the word, but yes.
Yeah, it works. It works for me.
Yeah, I think it was, like, 8 hours long, but I sped it up to, like, 1.4 times the speed.
How long did it take?
About 6, I think.
Okay, that's not so bad.
Yeah, it's not so bad. I felt like it was... sometimes it did feel like it was kind of pusing, like a bit like a repetitive, but
yeah, it was.
Yeah, but overall, was really interesting. You have notes.
Noted. Okay, I really did. I do like this book a bit, and I don't know why I said a bit, but I like this book. Period. And one thing I do want to talk about is disability porn, which I see a lot with Bruneians who have social media accounts, which kind of shows that we don't have a lot of discussion about people who are of different ability. Also, again, I don't know what the right term is, because I had this discussion with my friend who is blind, and I asked him, so what's the word? Is it less able or is it differently able? And he was telling me, I don't know, just last week I changed my mind about what a term is. And at that point he picked people of different ability. And when the week before he said less abled. So I want to talk about disability porn because I find it very interesting. So disability porn is a term used towards people who are able-bodied or, in quotation marks, normal bodies, who would share stuff on social media, or at least have this thinking that for every minute or minor things that a person of different ability does, they're like, oh, you're so brave. I can't believe you're able to do that. And I always have a lot of thoughts about this because there are some stuff that I've seen on social media done by people who are differently abled. And I'm like, whoa, that's amazing. But I'm also really cautious about sharing them because I don't know if that's a reflection of my prejudices.
Mm-mm. Yeah, yeah, I get it.
Mm.
What
are your thoughts?
I actually, yeah, disability porn. I really enjoyed that chapter. I think it was a chapter.
Yeah.
Because, like, she really explained the how it is actually, like, you lower the standards for disabled people or people with disability. And then
it's not just you lower the standard, but also the standards are either really low or the standards are really high, because there's also, she was talking about Olympians and how what people tend to say about people who are Olympians is, I have a normal body, even I can't do that.
Yeah.
Which she says is also problematic.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's still isolating those people as different.
Yes. Can I finish?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I thought we were having a discussion, oh, that's all.
Oh, but like, I wasn't done with my sentence.
Okay, sauce.
So basically, like, the way she said it was that people who are able-bodied, we lowered the standards. And then for people with disability or disabled people. And then when disabled people meet those standards, we praise them, but we also other them. And it's the same as what you said, where we like put the standards up really high, and then we expect other disabled people to meet those standards as well, as if like all of them can be Olympians. And all of them can do this, all of them can do that, just because they share a similar disability, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And also, I don't know, I just find it, for me, I always find it a struggle if I want to share stuff from people who are disabled. Because on the one hand, sure, recognition. On the other hand, am I participating in disability porn?
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree. I follow.
It's hard.
Yeah, I follow some crafters and artists who are disabled and are in the disability justice area. So I on my social media, there's always some discussion of that, And it's really interesting for me to see all of from their perspective, because, you know, that's what matters, right? And I think as long as you don't center the disability, you know, with regards to their achievement or whatever they do, it's not disability porn. Because it's just like a cool thing that someone has done.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, the takeaway that I see, that I get from this book, is that we are far from seeing people who are disabled as full persons. And it did make me reflect on Brunei quite a bit, because one of the things I find really interesting when I moved to Australia, because a lot of people here are white and hence they're daredevils. I see a lot of people who use space boots. Space boots or moon boots? I can't remember what they're called. I think it might be. Let me Google if it's moon boots or space boots. So, do you not know space boots?
No. Again, sheltered okay. child.
They're not called... Not really. They're not even called space boots. So, they're these boots, right? they are boots-ish. So, they are used by people who have... broken toes or broken legs, I guess. Boots for broken legs. I don't know what it's called. Yeah, so basically, like, these boots, I don't know why I can't find them, because I was searching for them a few months ago for my broken toe. So people who use these boots, it's to protect their legs from injuring themselves some more, basically. So since I moved here, I've seen a buttload of people who are in public using these boots. And I always thought about this in Brunei, because I don't know if it's because we just don't have high amount of people who break their bones or whatever, but I just don't see people, like, we don't even have to talk about people who are disabled. We can just look at people who have broken bones. I don't see a lot of those people out in public, is what I realize. And I don't know if it's because they're told to just stay at home, or we just, I don't know, it's just this kind of othering thing. If you see those people with crutches, for instance, they're just not in public as much.
It's really hard to
in comparison to here. But also, in comparison to here, where I see a lot of people with, like, crutches and stuff all the time. You're right. It is hard to be in public, because it's in Brunei, it's not a very friendly space for people with...
There are no mobility
aids. I guess walking problems.
Yeah.
Very little mobility aids, I think.
We barely have any, like, sidewalks.
But it's not just that. I do wonder if it's, like, kids, for instance... Do parents even allow them to leave the house when they break bones and stuff? Because I remember my brother, I don't think he was even, they wouldn't even let him out of the house because he broke a collarbone. And when I sprained my arm, I was in a sling and I don't even remember leaving the house because of it.
Okay.
We're just constantly hiding people. Like, that's just a minor thing. Like, that can be fixed, which is also a thing that we need to talk about, like the fixing thing. That is an issue that can be fixed. Like, bones, they attach together over time, blah, blah, blah. But if people like that with, like, I guess, quote unquote, major minor injuries, can't even be in the public, what about people who are disabled?
Yeah.
Why do you have to hide people who doesn't fit, a full body, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I would say it's, like, under the guise of, like, protecting them, but, like, not really.
Okay, wait. I did want to talk about going towards fullness in fairy tales, because that's what essentially the book is about. It's about, like, the problem of fairy tales, and also now it's superhero movies.
Yeah.
And how disability in... There's... In all, it seems to me like in all fairy tales, there is a problem with, part of the problem is disability, isn't it?
The lack, like something, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, the lack of something. Like with Ariel and the Little Mermaids, because she can't walk, even though she's already a full person. And what else was there? What other fairy tales are there?
I remember Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, it's Beast. Not being a full person.
Yeah.
All these fairy tales, they're always striving towards completeness. And completeness means having a normal body. And the only, I don't know if it's the only, maybe there are some more that I'm forgetting. The only person in Disney fairy tales who did not become quote-unquote complete is Quasimodo. And
Hunchback.
What's Quasimodo even in?
Hunchback.
Yeah, Hunchback of Notre Dame. Yeah. So, and she was saying, for her, as somebody with cerebral palsy, her dream was always moving towards that completeness of having a normal leg, for instance, not having a limp, etc.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, okay. So it was interesting how, like she said, in especially what I remember is when she talks about Quasimodo, like at the end of the movie, Esmeralda gets her love interest. She gets a story, right? A love story and a happy ending. But Quasimodo, his happy ending is having friends. Like, will he?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, like, indication that he will ever, he will have a future partner. Because apparently, like, yeah, friends is all he deserves.
Right.
Also, there was how it is the onus of, like, responsibility is on mm-hmm. the individual to fix their disability.
Yeah.
Instead of mm-hmm. the society accommodating to their yeah. disability.
Yeah. Because part of it, most of it, is because disabled or differently able people have to adapt to what able people have, the environment that is set by able people. And the problem that we have in society now is that we see these things, and I guess like with COVID and everything, it's kind of true, we see these things as not things that we can change. Like, these laws and regulations are made by people, and yet we treat it as laws and regulations that are set in stone.
Mm.
Yeah. Did you know that in the US, for, I don't know if it's for all, but if you're a person with a disability, you're not encouraged to get married.
Oh, because of tax reasons, right?
I think it's tax, and also it's, I don't know, you just don't get money or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is kind of fucked up.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah. But which goes to show, like, these people are treating disabled people as, you don't deserve love.
Yeah, you don't deserve the same kinds of traditions and, like, you know, like, marriage and weddings, they are kind of like a community thing, right? It is also excluding them from that community if they from participating in that community if they're not encouraged to get married.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, like, that's the problem, like, with a lot of disabled people, they can't strive for that able-bodiedness. So instead, people just limit their what they can or cannot do, which kind of sucks. She also mentioned how superhero movies, not comics, which I find very interesting. Superhero movies are now the new fairy tales because it's also about striving towards that perfect body or the perfect being able, 100% able. For the case of Captain America, you see Steve Rogers, like, very small, a lot of medical problems and stuff. And his transformation was moving towards this, like, ideal idea of what a macho man is. Mm. Mm.
I found it quite interesting, like, for Captain America. Mm. I think in the second and third movies, we kind of see, like, did I dream this stuff? I'm not sure. But, like, we see him, like, he's still that person in his old body actually on the inside, mm-hmm. because he experienced that prejudice while he was having all of those health problems. But now it's kind of like bewildering to him now that he has this body that people treat him like he's like a normal person, like an average person, or even
because he's still the same person.
Yeah, but in but he is actually mm-hmm. the same person. It's just his body that is mm-hmm. different. And I kind mm-hmm. of wish that Amanda Leduc really went into that, but that's just me and my like weird superhero yeah. dissecting thing.
Yeah, because I do think, I'm not discounting her experience or anything like that, but I think when you mentioned earlier about how the book felt repetitive, you're right. And there are some stuff that I feel that can be argued about superhero. I don't know about films, because comics are a very diverse environment.
Yeah.
X-Men, for instance.
Like Hawkeye.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I think superhero films kind of ruined that, because it's feeding into the whole Disney idea of moving towards perfectionism. They don't, like, sure, we have personality flaws and everything, but it's very rarely flaws on the body.
Iron Man, though.
Because just...
He removed that thing... So he's fine.
He right? did eventually, yeah. See, exactly, yeah. He did eventually remove it. Just look at like how Thor was written in the last Avengers film. Which one was it? Endgame.
Fuck that game. How he's
that how yeah how there's just so many unnecessary fat shaming, and he had to use a fat suit, which was really gross. Like, he's a god. He doesn't need his muscles. So yeah. Why would you... Like, sure, he can be fat, but you don't have to make him less just because he's fat. Like, he, generally, his power does not derive from his muscle. It comes because he's a god of thunder.
Yeah. Like, full stop. That's it. He's the god of thunder. He can look however he fucking yeah. wants.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder why the X-Men films don't do as well. Because there seems to be a lot of criticisms towards it being like too tacky or whatever. But that's the thing with comics. All comics are tacky anyhow. But I just don't understand why the X-Men films, because I find them really fun and I think they're really good disability representation. But I don't know. I just wish those films do better and concentrate less on people who are hot and with superpower, and instead focus on different looking superheroes in the X-Men series. So what's our next book for October? October? Bloody hell.
I have absolutely no idea.
Our book for October is The Weight of Our Sky by Hannah Alcuff.
Follow us on Book Club Haters on Twitter and our mothership at Songkit Alliance. And SongkitAlliance.com and on Facebook at Songkit Alliance. Bye.
Bye.